Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way to our conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or 877-462-7555, or you can go to our website, steinershow.org, and click on their banner. The University of Maryland Center for Integrative Medicine is having this conference, Health and Wellness Conference, and it's a one-day symposium for physicians, the public, allied professionals, health professionals, and it's really based on really understanding kind of numerous modalities in healthcare, practiced by different cultures, practiced by different medical systems, issues that kind of integrate what we think of as holistic medicine with standard medicine, if that's the proper way to say it. And we are joined here in studio by Dr. William Rollo, Director of Clinical Services at the Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Maryland, and on phone, Dr. Chris D'Adamo, who is an assistant professor of family and community medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine as well. And, gentlemen, good to have you both with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So, you there, Dr. D'Adamo? No? Yes? Do we have him up? Okay. Chris D'Adamo? All right, as soon as you can get that rolling here, we'll get him on the air with us. All right. Hi, you there, doctor?
I am.
Good. Okay, we got you. Good. Wonderful. So, let's begin. I mean, I think, just for an introduction, the first with William Rollo and then over to Chris D'Adamo, that's just kind of for our listeners to kind of explain this whole idea of integrative medicine.
Yeah. Well, integrative medicine, I think, is something that many of us as practitioners increasingly found important to our practice. So we had the experience of taking care of patients. Many of them did well when the illness was an acute kind of a thing, but increasingly as people had chronic illness, it became difficult for conventional medicine really to get them where we needed to go. So integrative medicine sort of steps back from that and says, take a broader view of the person in an integrative context, in the context of their environment, in the context of how they take care of themselves, their nutrition, their exercise, their substances, in the context of their life, what happens at work, what their emotional experience of things is, etc. So it takes that broad view, and then it says, from a clinical perspective, when you work with that person, try to use other modalities that are not typical pharmacologic, conventional kinds of things as ways of intervening on these broad set of issues.
I mean, there's been a lot of reluctance, I think, Chris D'Adamo, at least from people I've spoken to in the past on these issues, for many physicians to kind of accept the notion of integrative medicine. The idea that that there are other modalities, there are what people call holistic medicine, to approach not just to healthy living, but actually approach disease and addressing kind of illness. So so talk a bit about that, Chris.
Sure. Well, first of all, I think Bill described, you know, the concept of integrated medicine beautifully. I mean, it really is. It's not just modalities; it's an approach. And I think what we're seeing now, you know, certainly in the 20 years or so of our existence, is that, you know, this is informed by evidence. And what we found as far as acceptance goes, both among physicians and just the general population, is that, you know, when you can point to studies to support this treatment approach and many of the modalities that Bill mentioned, nutrition, meditation, exercise, and so on, acupuncture, that, you know, it's much more acceptable to the medical community and to patients.
I remember, and I'm talking about acupuncture, this was a huge argument in medicine for a long time. A lot of doctors poo-pooed, and conventional medicine poo-pooed acupuncture. I remember my father, who was a physician, went to China, and I remember he came back with a story, and he started really studying acupuncture after this, because he came back, this was in the 60s, maybe 70s, I don't recall when, but he went to medicine. He saw an operation where anesthesia was given with acupuncture.
Yeah.
And he came back and he said, I always thought this was quackery.
Well, that'll make a believer out of you, huh? There's nothing like cutting somebody open and having them not complain.
Right.
So I think that's very much right. You know, even beyond that, it's sort of mind-stretching to think that we can't even measure how acupuncture works. It's not like we can put needles in and we can measure clearly the mechanisms by which acupuncture is having its effect. And there's always an issue of trying to distinguish between the placebo aspect of any intervention, conventional or otherwise, and the actual intervention itself. But notwithstanding all that, as Chris has said, increasingly acupuncture is a place where there is firm evidence of impact. And that's made a big difference. Payers are now paying for acupuncture in many cases.
Right, right. I mean, so where does that evidence come from? Because you just said it was hard to track it. So mm-hmm. where's the evidence come from?
Clinical study. Chris, you might want to comment.
Yeah, sure.
If you'd like.
No, I mean, randomized controlled trials, for instance. I mean, that is the kind of the gold standard. You know, again, for these integrated modalities, we apply the same degree of evidence and scrutiny and evaluation that we would for anything else. So I think, you know, we have the great stories like you talked about. I think what's really kind of driven us forward and has, you know, insurers covering acupuncture now is the fact that the evidence base with solid randomized controlled trials and meta-analyses of those trials has really given it broader acceptance.
Because there's also, there was an article in the paper yesterday that I was reading about ginkgo biloba, the supplement is supposed to help your brain grow and get stronger, and memory get growing and stronger. And there was a huge debate in the New York Times between the researchers who said it's actually dangerous because it affects your liver, but then others saying that the experiments where the mice were giving too heavy a dosage, you really can't judge it by that way. There is this continuing debate. Now, this is part of your area, Christy Adamo. There's a continuing debate over the efficacy of using supplements and what people use in holistic medicine and the kind of supplements people take every day. I mean, this is an area still of kind of contention and kind of growth and dialogue, for want of a better way of putting it.
Absolutely. What a perfect segue. I'm actually presenting this at the conference, this very topic, because there is, we're having an Health and Wellness conference that we'll talk about later. There is debate, and there's evidence, for instance, with ginkgo biloba, kind of pro and con. And I think there are some supplements where the evidence is, certainly the positive evidence overwhelms or outweighs any negative. Fish oil, vitamin D, probiotics, for instance, and then lots of others too. But, you know, that's why we need to do the research that we're doing to determine whether these things work or not.
So when you work in this, I mean, I'm very curious about the conversations that you all have with your peers on this issue. I mean,
So let me say a couple things about that. One is let's start with the patient conversations, because I think, just as you indicated, a lot of what we do potentially can be seen in different ways. The evidence base isn't firmly established, et cetera. Now, that's also true in conventional medicine. It's just not ordinarily at the forefront of a conversation. So patients make their decisions often conventionally based on the recommendations of a physician. What we try to do in our clinic, in the Center for Integrative Medicine, what we try to do is provide evidence-informed care, meaning that we can't always say that there is firm evidence that such and such is the right way to go, but what we can say is we'll give you the information about the extent to which there is evidence. And many patients, again, having tried a conventional approach, will oftentimes opt to take an approach that comes across to them as being more fundamental, not being so much on the suppressive side. Gee, I've got inflammation, I'm going to push it down with a certain kind of a medicine, but rather I'm going to use a medicine that promotes my body's ability to heal itself. That has an intrinsic appeal to many patients, and we try to work with them on that on the basis of what evidence
exists. Can you give a concrete example of how that works?
Sure. You might have a patient who comes in with an inflammatory disease, let's say heart disease, that was originally understood largely as a kind of mechanical issue, a blockage in the blood vessels. So what do you do about a blockage in the blood vessels? Well, probably you either take medicine to dilate the blood vessels some, or you do a surgery to open up the blood vessels in some way. Increasingly, even conventional medicine is understanding that underneath that, There are biochemical tendencies that create these blockages that we ought to be able to deal with. The integrative medicine side sort of takes it a step further and says even radical dietary change potentially can reverse the kinds of blockages that might occur. That's the work that Dean Ornish has done, for example, over the last dozen years or so.
Right.
That's radical thinking that has now permeated out into the community, such that I think many people are aware Bill Clinton ended up on an Ornish type diet as a way of reversing some of his chronic disease.
He's become a vegan.
Right.
I'm curious in this, because I think this is an area that there are many people who listen to this program, and folks, you can join us here, by the way. We're live right now at 410-319-8888, we've talked in the past, go to naturopaths, homeopaths, go to people who are in alternative medicine, alternative health. I think the importance of this conversation, what you're all doing, is just trying to not just marry these worlds of conventional medicine and alternative medicine, but to see how they actually can work together, how they complement one another.
Right.
Well, that is as the field has evolved, and now you know the preferred term is integrated medicine. It integrates both the conventional side and sort of the alternative side, and that's really how it works optimally. So, if someone has an infection, we're not going to suggest that you know they just take herbs for that. You're going to go with an antibiotic, but for something that you know a chronic disease or something that can be managed through lifestyle, that's probably a better first option. So that's really that is how the field has evolved.
So what do you expect to come out of this conference, and who do you expect to be there?
Well, last year we had a sellout conference. It's healthcare professionals, physicians, nurses, acupuncturists, social workers, and so on, but also just sort of your health-conscious consumer in the public, and that's what's nice about it. So, you know, you get a lot of medical conferences with the healthcare folks, and then you get other types for the general public. This brings both in. So, you know, we've got 300-plus already registered for the conference, and, anytime you get several hundred like-minded people that are there to learn more about how they can promote their own health and wellness, you know, it's a really beautiful thing.
And I'm very curious, as physicians, neither one of you started out this way.
Right.
So I'm very curious your own journey through this. I mean, what was it that began to open the doors that they don't easily open for many physicians?
So I'm a family medicine doc by training, and so that means I was on the front lines, as they say, of care, seeing patients who came in with a variety of issues. Some of them could be addressed from the conventional side pretty straightforward way, but you get enough patients who are really not succeeding, you're not succeeding with them, and they're frustrated with the limitations of what you're able to do for them, that you naturally start looking on the outside. And patients oftentimes, if you're open to having that conversation with them, will tell you about the things that they either have done or would like to do. So that starts to open a whole set of doors. And for me, probably one of my earliest experiences was actually when I was a medical resident, a doctor in training, I was on an orthopedic rotation. So we were seeing patients that had musculoskeletal problems. We were in the ortho clinic, and there was a set of orthopedic residents there and a set of chiropractic residents there.
Hmm.
And what I found was that my job was to go in with either of the two and learn from them. And I was struck by how many times when I emerged from the consultation with the chiropractor, the patient was actually feeling better, as contrasted with what was happening when the patient saw the orthopedist. Now, that doesn't mean that orthopedic medicine is bad medicine or that orthopedic surgery is not needed. Obviously, that's not the right conclusion. But there is something there that goes beyond the more conventional modalities, and that's part of what we want to look at. I want to just add briefly to that, to say from an integrative perspective, one of the nice things that brings to that thought process is, so you might be a chiropractor and you might do an adjustment. You might manually change the layout of the bones and muscles in a person's body on an acute basis. What does that do for them over the long term? Not necessarily very much. So from an integrative perspective, you want to think beyond that about the kinds of things that you could do that would sustain a realignment of physical, mechanical forces in a person's body. And that brings in a whole variety of other modalities, structural integration potentially, massage therapy potentially, physical therapy and movement therapies. And we're just talking here on the musculoskeletal side.
Right. No, I think what you're saying, though, is critically important because it's a huge step forward for conventional medicine to accept that as part of a clinical process.
To be willing to bring that in and say,
right. We
can do better if we open our doors to broader modalities of care. And we can do better not just by bringing in a modality like chiropractic, but if we broaden our conceptual frame for what it takes to help a person heal.
In the last, I'd say, 10 years, what I've learned going to chiropractors, which I never did before, because I grew up in a way that didn't trust chiropractors.
Your dad was a doc, you said.
Right. He didn't trust chiropractors. Chiroquactors, people would call them. But what I learned is the depth of knowledge chiropractors have about skeletal structures, about muscular structures, about how they work together. And they do know what they're doing. And I think that the idea of working with medicine is also it's important for that to happen. That's why I'm so interested in the integrative medicine at the University of Maryland, because I think that it's this huge leap forward to where medicine has gone before. And I'm curious, Chris, can I ask you the same question? I mean, so what about you? What was your own sojourn to this?
So my path's a little bit different. I'm actually not a physician. I'm a researcher. But what got me kind of interested in this topic was my work, ironically, as a personal trainer and nutrition consultant. I saw that people didn't just lose weight when I was working with them when they worked these lifestyle modalities in, but, you know, they would get control of their diabetes, of their blood pressure. You name it. Autoimmune diseases would drastically improve. So I got into the research of it and, been doing exercise and nutrition research, and then came across the work that Dr. Brian Berman, who's the director of our center, was doing with acupuncture, and was just blown away with the quality and, you know, just how it helped really kind of evolve policy. And, that was something that really appealed to me, and it's been a real pleasure doing work here.
410-319-8888. It's been a while since Dr. Berman's been on the show. It's been too long, actually. I was getting back on the air with us.
And
I think that, so are there skeptics who come to this conference?
Are there people at the conference, sure. I mean, I think it actually pays to be skeptical.
Yes, I agree. I completely agree with that. Yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You know, we're not zealots for these kind of things. I mean, that's why we research and evaluate them to make sure that they work. So, yeah, I mean, I think people should have somewhat of a skeptical mind and come in and not drink the Kool-Aid necessarily, but really take an evidence-informed approach. So, yeah, we'll have, and again, the modalities that we have are going to be a little bit something for everybody. I mean, we've got the nutrition, exercise. We've got spirituality and health. We've got, I think something that's of great interest now is the impact of the environment on health. So I think we should view all this with a bit of skepticism, but also with an open mind.
And the environment aspect of this is interesting. It's not our topic for today, but one of the things which we have explored in the past and like to explore more has to do with how the environment affects our health. And I think often that we look to, we always look to kind of genetic source, other sources, whether it's especially in cancer research, and don't kind of address the environmental issues, because in some ways it's very scary to address environmental issues, because what we might have to do if we realized what that might hold.
Right. Yeah. I think the Chris, I don't mean to cut you off, but I think the environmental stuff at this point is a huge window of opportunity for how we view what we do. So in a sense, the genetic contributions, now that the genome is increasingly available for clinical purposes, the genetic contributions are very important, but they've actually opened the door to an understanding of the importance of environment on the genome itself. And that includes, not only social, toxic environmental, water, air kinds of factors, but also social factors that have an impact on someone's experience, emotions, et cetera, and additionally their nutritional practice. You know, we think of nutrition as something that's a sort of behavioral thing and only that, but when you recognize that within each of us is a microintestinal environment within our intestines, that there's a broad array of microorganisms that are living and that are constantly interacting with our own intrinsic genome. That, again, is another view of the environmental influence that I think is increasingly important from an integrated perspective.
So let me open the phone to at least get one call before we have to end the conversation. 410-319-8888. And Clarence, you're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Steiner.
Yes, welcome.
I was listening. I'd like to ask your guests. It may seem whack, but, you know, it's serious to me. When you say acupuncture, does anybody ever go back and look at the actual history of acupuncture and how it was applied as an application by in times gone by? Like, you know, supposedly it was a gift from the god that was supposedly they worshipped at that time. So how far do you go back to see what the application really was? Or is this just a modern-day rendition? We'll try this and see if it works,
okay.
You know, as opposed to looking at even in the diet that the Japanese people had culturally, which was more healthy than what it is now because of the introduction of American diets into them. Does anybody go back and look at the
Let me let Chris or Chris handle that.
I mean, I can. I think it's a great question. I mean, there are different styles of acupuncture. Typically, the styles that we have researched are the traditional Chinese medicine. So they go all the way back to the way it was done, you know, for thousands of years, and that's what's been studied in our work.
Right, and in our clinic, our practitioners, a significant number of them were actually trained on the traditional Chinese methods, some of them in China. So I think we have that historical perspective on things. It is one of the oldest forms of medical care, if you will.
I wish we had more time because I'd love to get deeper into this.
We'll
come back and spend an entire hour doing this with some other people as well as you all. But let me make sure people know how to get there if they want to. Do I have this right? You'll tell me. They go to events at, is that right? How do people find it?
For the conference, you go to www.compmed.umm.edu. That's the best way to get to it. And it's at the Baltimore Hilton on Saturday. Day-long event, and we're very excited about it.
And we'll have that on our website, standardshow.org, so you can click on that link. And if you want to register for the conference and go, please do. And we'll come back for a post-op conversation.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Enjoyed it.
Here with Dr. William Rollo, who is Director of Clinical Services at the Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Maryland Medical Systems, and and Dr. Chris DiDamo, who is Assistant Professor of Family and Community Medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, both joining us today, and we'll have more information soon. Don't go away. We'll be right back.